Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, guys. Welcome back to the show. So, sorry for the confusion. I screwed up and I did not have Omar Khadr's lawyer on. I had Gabriel Chavone on to talk about the Israeli border in Arizona. The occupied West Bank, i.e. the West. All right. On the phone is our good friend Adam Morrow. Live from Cairo, reporter for Interpress Service. That's ipsnews.net when he's writing anyway. But anyway, welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Adam?
Good, Scott. I'm good. Glad to be back.
Good, good. Very happy to talk to you again. Hang on. Let me get my earphones on. I forgot. All right. So how's the Arab Spring going?
Well, I don't know if your listeners saw yesterday, but there was considerable bloodshed in Egypt as Egyptians marked the fourth anniversary of the January 25th, 2011 uprising that ended the 30-year rule of Hosni Mubarak. We saw demonstrations and clashes across the country yesterday, and I think the final death toll is something like 21 people, and that might include two or three police as well. As usual, it's impossible to really get details because you have the government statements are entirely untrustworthy, and it's just very difficult to get to the bottom of these things. But what we do know, there were definitely violent clashes in several parts of the country yesterday. To many people, to the surprise of many observers, because people had sort of thought that maybe due to a string of recent setbacks, the whole opposition demonstration phase had sort of ended, and these weekly demonstrations were winding down. But yesterday actually looked like things have sort of been re-energized, possibly because of I don't know if you know that Hosni Mubarak, the president, was finally sort of declared innocent of all charges against him, and his two sons, who were also faced charges of corruption, were both let free today. Were both released from prison today.
Today, so all of these things.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Just they want to make sure okay. Rub it in your face a little bit there, huh?
Yeah, well, they often do that. They sort of tend to choose these politically significant dates to do these things on. And I think that's the exact intention. I think it's sort of to rub people's faces in it, and you know, resistance is futile, sort of mindset. Mm-hmm. But yesterday was surprising. Yesterday was again, people didn't expect it was going to be that serious, and it turned out to be a pretty big deal, reflecting massive discontent, I would say, because we're now in a situation basically now where it's a very similar situation to that which preceded the uprising in 2011, where you've got mass unemployment, you've got poverty rates that are above 50% now nationwide, the very little chance for any sort of upward mobility on the part of, you know, the thousands of fresh graduates that enter the job market every year. So the situation is no better. The desperation is the same. The economic stagnation is the same. People don't see any change, you know, 4 years after the uprising and a full year and a half now since the coup that replaced the elected president, Mohamed Morsi, with its current president, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. So people haven't seen anything, any improvements, and there's still a lot of resentment, as was palpable yesterday.
Mm. All right, well, so I think first question is, who all's protesting out there? Are they mostly Muslim Brotherhood supporters, or is it, I know the big headline here was the young woman from the Socialist Party who was killed, murdered, by government forces with birdshot from a shotgun, killed her.
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. And while it's tragic what happened to her, of course, needless to say, I mean, everybody is in unanimous on the tragedy of that incident. What's interesting also is how there's definitely a trend in the media to sort of that sort of seize on the non-Islamist victims of these recent political violence. Yes, you know, I mean, she was a socialist, but she was atypical
the pictures of her death went out on Twitter almost immediately, I think, and so
they caught her death on camera, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, no, grotesque, definitely grotesque. You know, the police are heavy-handed as ever. I mean, they're basically, they begin with live ammunition. It's not like in the past where they would start with tear gas and then move up to birdshot. They start with the heavy ammo right off the bat. You know, that's how desperate they are to clamp down on these protests. But back to your question about who's protesting, right. It's a very good question. And it's interesting how little what we had traditionally called the revolutionaries are participating in the demonstrations we've seen over the last year and a half, and they have become, for the most part, they have definitely become brotherhood led. That's not to say that you have leftists in there and you have some liberal activists and these sort of things that have joined in as well. But for the most part, the bulk of it is definitely being led and being maintained by people who are demanding the reinstatement of Morsi as president. Which is interesting, because if you remember the sort of long interregnum between Mubarak and Morsi, there was a very strong revolutionary presence all the time. There were constant revolutionary demonstrations for every possible thing you could conceive of. These so-called revolutionary forces were calling demonstrations both before Morsi was elected and after he was elected. They continued to push these demonstrations all the time. And what's interesting now is how little you hear of these so-called revolutionary groups now.
I mean, it sounds like what happened was they got their coup. The military came and kicked the Muslim Brotherhood out of power. And then that was when they quit protesting, because that was what they really wanted. They were happier with the next Mubarak in line than with the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, from what I understand, the revolutionary camp was split in two after that. You basically had the ones who were like, look, you know, this is the best thing for everybody. Democracy, if democracy leads to Islamism, then let the military take over. And then you had another camp who will always be against the military establishment and who will always be against the Mubarak regime. And that was what was reanimated. I mean, the coup brought back the Mubarak regime. So those people, you know, you have those people who are against the Brotherhood and who are also against who are against any sort of return to the Mubarak regime. Yeah. But it's just interesting how little organization you're seeing. I mean, it's the Brotherhood has been the only one that's been able to consistently, despite the incredible crackdown, despite this unbelievable, unprecedented crackdown on the Brotherhood. I mean, people are saying it's by far the worst crackdown going back to the Nasser period, that this is the Brotherhood has said this is the worst thing by far that we've ever faced. But yet they still managed to mobilize people on the streets, which is pretty remarkable. And they're doing it from exile for the most part. A lot of them are in Qatar. A lot of them are in Turkey now. But again, there's no revolutionary front, you know, there's no single sort of revolutionary party or front that you could really name that's been particularly active in the demonstrations. So back to your question, who is demonstrating? It's interesting now, a full 4 years after January 25th, and if you remember, some of the early criticisms of the Brotherhood was that it sort of waited a little bit before it joined the revolution in 2011. It sort of tested the waters to make sure that, you know, is this thing really going to take off, or are we going to throw in our lot with this thing and then get screwed in the end, you know, because it turns out to be a dud or whatever. So they took some criticism early on, saying that, oh, you know, they didn't participate in the revolution from the first day. It took them a couple days before they joined. And what's interesting is we've gone from that to now, where they pretty much, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, a lot of people would take exception to this, but from what I can see, they really are the main revolutionary force.
Mm-hmm. And it's part of that is just a generational thing, right? Where all the old men are in jail, so the young Muslim Brotherhood guys, they don't have to be conservative. They can be, you know, on the right, but radical rather than conservative.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of the young guys are in prison, too. I mean, the numbers that we're hearing range from 20,000 to 40,000 people behind bars.
Really? 20,000 to 40,000? Wow.
Yeah.
And how many killed? I know there were more than 1,000 massacred right during the coup, but then what about since then? Do you know?
I don't have a tally. I mean, since the coup, which was July 3rd of 2013, so that's about a year and a half ago.
Real quick. All right, hold it. We'll be right back.
Sure.
We'll be right back.
Sure.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back. I got Adam Morrow on the line, reporting for us from Cairo. And I'm sorry, man, about these hard breaks, Adam, and I never look at the clock.
No worries.
So the question was, I know approximately 1,000 people were killed right during the coup d'etat in the summer of 2013, and I know that hundreds more have been sentenced to death for, you know, treason or whatever, all convicted and sentenced in unison by hundreds at a time, like a Mooney wedding or something. But so then that was all the preface to the question of how many people do you think have been killed since then, if there's any kind of reasonable way to estimate?
Since July 3rd, and I'm sure tallies have been done. I mean, people are tracking this. You know, you'll have, for example, 20 people were killed yesterday. If the January 25th that preceded it, I think it was 60 people were killed. That was 1 year ago. So all of these things have probably added up. And well, also, by the way, the numbers of the people who were killed on August 14th, which was when those two big pro-Morsi sit-ins were dispersed, were violently dispersed by security forces. It's still uncertain exactly how many people were killed. I mean, the death tolls are conflict wildly. You know, the government has consistently come out and said it was no more than 500. Or something like that. The Brotherhood has said something like 2,500. So people are, you know, the consensus is sort of like it's about 1,000, maybe a bit more than 1,000 on August 14th alone of 2013. So it's really hard to nail down. What we can definitely say that at least 2,000 people, or maybe even as much as 2,500, have definitely been confirmed killed. And that's a conservative estimate. And that's not including all the people that were killed after the 2011 revolution uprising. If you remember, in 2011, something like 800 people were killed during the 18-day uprising, and none of those. None of the killers of those people have been brought to account. As I mentioned earlier, Mubarak and his long-standing interior minister, Habib al-Adli, and a bunch of ministry officials, and Mubarak's two sons, all of those guys have been vindicated or exonerated of murder charges. So as it currently stands, I mean, nobody's paid any price for any of the people that were killed, even back in 2011 at this point. And this is, by the way, one of the things that's contributing to popular discontent is this sense of unaccountability and the fact that so many people have died and virtually no one has been held account for it. The only people that are going to jail are demonstrators at this point.
Well, and this just in from antiwar.com is the Egyptian health ministry is saying that the death toll is 23 from yesterday, and while the Muslim Brotherhood or the pro-Morsi block, as they call it here in this gcreport.com, they're saying 25. But yeah, so that was going to be what I was going to ask you, too, was about the popular perception of Morsi, who, deposed the barely popularly elected Muslim Brotherhood that obviously was the subject of much discontent. But if there was a way you could compare him to, say, Mubarak's popularity, I don't know, 6 months before the Arab Spring broke out or something like that.
Sure. You mentioned Morsi. Did you mean Sisi?
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes, I did. I meant Field Marshal, meaning Desk Officer Sisi, who's never been in a fight in his life and is now the Israeli and American and self-appointed dictator of Egypt, Chancellor of the Revolution of 2011, the villain Sisi, yes.
Right. Well, as we've mentioned before, he went from a sort of high that was very much media induced, by the way. The euphoria, this sort of euphoria that followed Morsi's ouster and this, you know, the ascension of this great new national savior Sisi was very much media, this was entirely born of media hype. I mean, the media was behind this guy like, I mean, people were comparing him to Old Testament prophets, and I mean, it was just like, it's completely out of control. So that sort of initial euphoria has fell very, very quickly. And now a full year and a half since he took over, I would say it's kind of bottomed out. And a lot of the people who had sort of fallen for the trick, who had sort of supported him in those early days and who had joined those anti-Morsi protests in the summer of 2013, a lot of those people have now sort of changed their minds. And a lot of them express, feel that they've been tricked, basically, feel that they were duped. And they were like, we thought this guy was going to come in and clean the house and change things overnight and da-da-da-da. And it's been a full year and a half now, full of more than 6 months since he's been president now. And we've seen, you know, and there are very few tangible results on the street. There's no changes in the standard of living or anything like that that the average person can point to. You know, he's tried some. There are media bids to improve his legitimacy, to improve his popular legitimacy, like this big Suez Canal project, which it was claimed was gonna accrue all this fresh revenue to Egypt. But of course, none of that hasn't been completed yet. And so people aren't happy. People aren't happy. And I think there's some people are saying that you might see another big explosion on June 30th, which would basically mark the second anniversary of the coup. So, like I said earlier, you wanted to compare it to Mubarak. Even though Sisi's only been around, we've only even known Sisi's name for the last 2 years, he finds himself now in a very similar position as Mubarak, where he's dealing with deep discontent countrywide.
You can't take 2011 back. The people of Egypt have proven how much power they have when they can get their act together, and that's a lesson that they're not ever going to be able to forget. You know, they did
right.
it to, so they don't, in other words, it took them 30 years to realize they could get rid of this Mubarak guy, but now they're fresh from getting that done, even if it is 4 years later. That's not very long. So he's in a different position than Mubarak was, it seems like.
It's easier for them to imagine
hurting him or getting rid of him.
Exactly. The people know that they did it once so that it can be done. And at the same time, the regime knows it also, so they're incredibly defensive and about criticism. You know, they're extremely defensive.
Hey, let me ask you this:
and insecure.
To give the devil his due here, is he really trying to be a good technocrat and get everything together as best he can, or is this guy just simply another African kleptocrat?
Oh, I think, I mean, any attempt to making the country function better and to improve the lot of the average Egyptian, I think is done for entirely tactical purposes, and, you know, would only be to forestall revolution. I don't think it's out of any genuine desire to help the average citizen. You know, any steps taken in that direction would only be in order to ease public disaffection with his regime. I don't think it would be out of any true sense of empathy with the average Egyptian.
Now, so the Muslim Brotherhood is outlawed, but are there any kind of parliamentary elections coming up? Any other real players, or it'll just be
there are parliamentary elections coming up, but everybody sort of knows that they're completely valueless because they don't, you know, it'll be an entirely cardboard rubber stamp assembly. You know, I mean, the Muslim Brotherhood were the real opposition before 2011. They were the real opposition. And all the other parties were just basically there to provide the illusion of multi-party democracy. The Brotherhood represented the only real opposition. The only opposition that wasn't made up just to lend the regime legitimacy. Now that they're gone, the only ones left you have are these ones that are willing to just be for show. They're just show parties. So it's kind of a waste. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of badly needed Egyptian resources. You know, the country's already struggling, and they're going to have to. What are they going to? They're going to spend several million Egyptian pounds putting on elections that don't really have any practical. There's no practical necessity. So you have that. There's a lot of cynicism in that regard. I mean, why? What's the point? We've got a dictator. Everybody knows. Why do we need to spend all this time and aggravation? And I'm sure the regime thinks the same thing. You know, I'm sure they're thinking like, good grief, I can't believe we have to go through this stupid. We have to put on this stupid show for everybody. You know, they would much rather do without it. You know, they have to maintain the impression
Right now, give me a minute here, real quick, on Rafah. Is it true that they're just completely razing the village of Rafah, creating a no man land?
Yeah.
Tell me, quick.
Well, from what I understood, they doubled this buffer zone from a 500 meter buffer zone to a full kilometer buffer zone, which runs along the border between Egypt Sinai Peninsula and.
So this
and
just
the
completely
Strip.
Destroys the black market tunnels. Is that it? This just eliminates them, Adam.
I mean, that's their aim. I don't know how many of these tunnels are still in operation, but I'm assuming that most of them are gone, if not all of them, at this point.
All right. Thank you so much for coming back on my show, man. I sure appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, y'all, that's the great Adam Morrow from Cairo. Be safe out there, dude. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first. And just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Hey, all, Scott here for Liberty.me, the brand new social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features nightly classes, guides, events, publishing, and so much more. Sign up now and you get the first 30 days free. And if you click through the link in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or use the promo code Scott when you sign up, you'll save $5 per month for life. That's more than a third off the regular price. And hey, once you sign up, add me as a friend on there at ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.